This FabFM Voice of the Douglas Shire podcast is proudly brought to you by Bendigo Bank, Port Douglas and Mossman, offering a full range of competitive banking products and technology you'd expect from a big bank with the personal service and care you'd expect from us. Drop into your nearest branch at Port Village Shopping Centre or Front Street Mossman. Bendigo Bank, the better big bank.
Okie doke, it is that time to catch up with our medicine lady. Firstly, a very good afternoon, Dr. Alex Bernhardi. You look well, you look as if you've got a spring in your step.
Thank you, Gary. I certainly feel that way.
Excellent stuff. Always a pleasure to have you here. And I know a lot of people are enjoying the podcast. If they don't get the chance to hear you as we talk live, they can come back and get that information. Of course, they are archived. Someone was only talking to me about vitamin D and, you know, the sunshine. I said, well, it's not as simple as that. You should have a listen to our podcast from a few weeks ago. So it's excellent stuff and it's getting good feedback. So we thank you very much for your time. We know you're busy with think tanks and many other projects in the Douglas Shire community. We're going to talk about a neurological disease. It's one I think we've all heard about, and it always sounds like a real nasty to me. And you tend to think of the elderly more, but I've got a feeling it's not just the case of for elderly people, but for many ages, actually, and that's Parkinson's disease. As always, I give you a straightforward question to start. What is it?
So, as you already pointed out, and I can see you've done your homework a little bit, Parkinson's disease is a neurological condition. And what happens is that a couple of specific nerve cells in the brain, the ones that normally produce a substance which is called dopamine, they gradually die. And that means because their purpose is to produce dopamine, we have very low levels of dopamine. And dopamine is a chemical which helps to relay messages between different areas of the brain, mainly those that control body movement. So basically, if we suffer from Parkinson's disease, lots of body movements can be affected.
So, you know, we've often seen the thing you think about when you think about somebody with Parkinson's disease is the shaking, basically, nasty illness that just must ruin people's lives. It must be very tough for not only the sufferer, but for the family around that individual. I mean, are there other symptoms? There's got to be, as always with our topics, a little bit more to it.
Yeah, so some of the early symptoms are, as you mentioned correctly, what we call a tremor, like, or a shaking, especially in the finger, in the hand, or in the feet. People often also complain about that the handwriting is changing. It looks very cramped. In general, there is a slowing down of all movements. So if your relative, has been known to just jump up off the chair, simple movements like that, they require a lot more effort and a lot more time. Another more subtle change in the beginning can be voice changes, because obviously in order to speak, you need, you need muscles for that as well. So the voice is affected. And another one, which is a very typical early symptom, is that your facial expression becomes very, very reduced. So people will notice and they will probably mistake your sort of like empty or the lack of facial expression as he's not really interested in what I'm saying, because you cannot express your emotions with your facial muscles anymore. So these are relatively early symptoms, and then later on we develop a loss of balance. So our gait will be very, we will have like a broad gait to make up for that. And also memory problems, depression, anxiety, sleep issues, and cognitive impairment, or with other words, dementia, can be then later signs of it as well.
So obviously those early signs are certainly something to look out for. And as you say, they may be confused for more simple things, potentially. But how, I mean, how does it get diagnosed if you're seeing a health professional, say, as an example?
So if you have concerns, there's no specific test. There's certainly no blood test or anything like that. However, your GP can either pick it up based on your history and the signs and symptoms that you would be concerned of, and certain physical tests that the GP can undertake, or sometimes the GP would refer you to a neurologist, a nerve specialist, to confirm if there is any doubt about the diagnosis. There is, some people will have, or most people will undergo a blood test and some, you know, imaging from the brain. However, that is more in order to exclude that there are any other causes responsible for the symptoms. It's not to diagnose Parkinson's. So it is mainly based on the symptoms.
Certainly seen on, well, dare I say it, social media, which seems to cover every topic on the planet these days, but it has been on that, some alternative options for certainly Parkinson's disease. What's your thoughts on treatment?
So the condition Parkinson's is definitely a progressive condition. So there is, unfortunately, no real cure for it. The only thing that can be done is to try and alleviate the symptoms, deal with the symptoms, slow down the physical signs of it, and obviously help the body in general. Like if, you know, all these, what we discussed previously, healthy lifestyle options, healthy nutrition, all these kind of things are very important. However, to date, there is no absolute cure for Parkinson's.
So even though the prognosis is fairly poor, is fairly frightening, really, for those sufferers, there are ways that you can probably prolong the more severe symptoms coming on with a healthy lifestyle?
Maybe not really prolong, but make the life better in many ways. And there are also other treatment. There are some medications. I need to mention that there are medications that the neurologist will prescribe, and they are basically trying to refill the dopamine that these cells are not producing anymore. That can help with the symptoms in the beginning. However, further down the track, these medications don't work as well anymore. But apart from these kind of medication, which will help to treat the symptoms but not the cause of Parkinson, there is definitely a benefit in physical therapy, occupational therapy, speech pathology, optimizing your diet, just in order to help you live your life as good as possible within the limitations of the disease.
Just one interesting thought you mentioned about depression, and one could understand that. It would be a fairly depressing state of affairs to be suffering with Parkinson's disease. But on a sort of a positive side, if you were able to, say, certainly feel a little bit better through your lifestyle, do you think there is potential just from a sort of a mental side of things to sort of battle through this a little bit, not obviously overcome it, but feel better just from a mental perspective?
Absolutely. And that also definitely is the case for the carers and for the relatives of a patient, of a person suffering from Parkinson, because that is a very difficult situation, especially because it is progressive and the day-to-day life can become at times very difficult. So we always need to really look at the mental health and the stress of the carers as well.
Absolutely. We'll take a break. We'll take some music too, and we'll come back and talk to the doc. We are covering the topic of Parkinson's disease with our medicine lady. That's Dr. Alex Bernhardi. We want to talk about who is potentially at risk and what causes it. Good question, eh? That's coming up shortly here at FAB. Now then, we're talking about the neurological disease, Parkinson's disease, as we would know it. It's a real nasty, there is no doubt. We have a question via the text from Bob, and Bob said, could I ask Dr. Alex if current research is focused on developing a dopamine replacement? He has a couple of friends that suffer with this horrible disease. It would seem sensible, you know, can we not just replace it and take a tablet and all will be good?
Yeah, so there are definitely medications that the neurologist would give you which are trying to replace that dopamine. Mm. However, it is a little bit tricky, and that's probably where more research needs to be done or maybe is underway. I'm not quite sure. It is tricky to deliver the medication in form of a tablet into these brain cells and literally into all the cells that require dopamine, because medication often undergoes all these different metabolical steps. So that is why we still haven't found that perfect dopamine replacement that really has this exact mechanism in your brain. I'm not sure if that really answers your question.
Yeah, so it is sort of possible, but it's getting that treatment directly to the source of the problem is the challenge.
Yes,
I suppose.
Yeah, it is more tricky when you look into the detail than, you know, what you would assume. But that is definitely one of the ways that the neurologists are trying to help people with Parkinson. And most of the common Parkinson's medication, they are based around a dopamine replacement.
There you have it, Bob. Not exactly the answer you wanted to hear, but certainly there are options, not as good as they could be at this stage, but it's being worked on, and sooner rather than later, hopefully. Now, let's talk about the people that are at risk. Parkinson's disease, I suppose the typical thought is somebody that's particularly elderly, but maybe not always the case. Who would you say, are there any particularly high risk groups as an example?
Yeah, just to put it a little bit into the context of some figures, we would assume that worldwide there are probably 10 million people wow. suffering from Parkinson's disease, and a very conservative number would be that we would have 40,000 properly diagnosed Australians. It is definitely a disease that gets more prevalent the older we get, with currently probably 1 in 100 people over the age of 60. But there are definitely a subset of patients who are under the age of 40 already. And unfortunately, the numbers are increasing. So that's something that throughout science we could see that the numbers are rising progressively, and there are some trends that the more developed the countries are, the higher the numbers are.
That's quite concerning, that, and one would say, hey, where's the connection with that? That, you know, that surprises me, and you think maybe you'd say third world countries, that's where the issue is. You're saying more developed countries are having the increase.
Yes, absolutely. But if we look at the causes, the suggested causes, then it doesn't really come to a big surprise anymore. And I'm saying suggested causes because the research definitely is not finalized with Parkinson's disease. Like with so many other conditions, we always think we've got it nailed and we know everything about a medical condition, but in reality, we always just know a little bit. So some of the suggested causes for Parkinson's disease are to a certain extent a genetic predisposition. However, the disease only appears to be inherited in like 15% of cases. So that is not a very strong genetic predisposition. Head trauma seems to be another cause that can increase your likeliness to develop Parkinson's disease. And then, unfortunately, environmental factors such as pesticides, toxins, and other chemicals, including heavy metals, they definitely have a very, very, very big role to play.
Just to pick up, because just to clarify, when we talk about heavy metals, we're not talking about weights, you know. So I just wanted to clarify that, because you and I know what you're talking about. But when we talk about heavy metals, we're talking about things like arsenic, aren't we? Chemicals, fluids, potentially, really, or contaminants within a fluid. It's not, you know, literally a lump of iron that's falling on your toe.
Yes, we are talking about the contaminants in everyday items. Mm. Light bulbs contain mercury. Our fertilizers, unfortunately, can contain a lot of heavy metals, lead, cadmium, mercury, arsenic, these kind of things. Mm. Yes.
Okay, I thought I'll just put that out there for those
ones. Absolutely, I'm always happy to re-emphasize that.
So anyway, please carry on.
The consensus within the researchers is that it is a combination of these factors that we just mentioned, which will trigger the changes that then ultimately lead to Parkinson's. So that means if you are a person with a specific genetic predisposition, and then you are exposed to either head trauma or a variety of environmental factors, then your individual risk to develop it is a lot higher. And just to give you another number, there was a recent article in regards to a certain pesticide which is used still widely in Australia, which is paraquat. And this study could prove that farmers and contract workers who are using this and a couple of other pesticides can be at a 250 times higher risk of developing Parkinson's disease if they have the genetic predisposition as well. So that means not everybody exposed to the same environmental conditions will develop Parkinson's disease, but if you are unlucky and you have the certain genetic predisposition, then your individual risk is immensely higher. And unfortunately, in the moment, there is still no way how we can safely diagnose or find out who of us is at the highest risk and who would need to be extra careful. We are not that far advanced. So, and that is what we are seeing with the increase of pesticide use in so many different areas, which we in most cases have no or very little control of. Our individual risk to develop one of these conditions, in this case, Parkinson's disease, or, you know, we talked about other conditions that we can get from pesticide use, is just incredibly high. So, and the researcher who wrote this recent article, he definitely said that we really need to look into our pesticide use, and we do need to look into finding safer levels of exposure, because clearly the current levels of exposure that we have, they are not looking out for the health of our people. They are looking out for anything but not to protect ordinary people from developing a lot of unnecessary conditions.
It's a concern, because if you take a farmer as an example, you can't just sell up and change your lifestyle. You know, we're relying a little bit on the leaders, our politicians and the decision makers to say, hey, you know, there's a problem here. We need to do something about it. I mean, we do know, and we have farmers in our very own community in the Douglas Shire saying, actually, we want to go and look at more natural options. And I think from your recent think tank, we're seeing more and more people show an interest. But it is a bit of an upward battle, isn't it, when we are plied with all these options that aren't good for us.
I think the biggest problem, and many of the articles that I've been reading, they come to the same conclusion, is that we normally believe that everything that we can buy in, you know, at the supermarket or at farm shops or at, you know, Bunnings or wherever, that it is because it is available that it would have been undergone, you know, rigid testing, and if it has that level of approval from one of our Australian authorities, that it is okay for us to use. So we try to, we are really over relying on that quality approval of the products that we are using. Instead, what we should do is we should really look around. You know, this particularly pesticide paraquat, it's been banned in 32 countries, including most countries in the EU. It is readily available in the US and very readily available in Australia. And very interestingly, some of the countries who are producing that pesticide, including Great Britain and Switzerland, they don't use it themselves. So they are allowed to produce it and sell it overseas, but they are not allowed to use it in their own countries. And I mean, we just really need to look at these evidences and then make our decisions based on this best knowledge and not over rely on legislation. And with this paraquat, it even goes that far that the Parkinson's Association of Australia says that there is definitely a growing evidence of its harmful effects, whereas, you know, the authority who regulates it says, no, it's fine. So, and it's, I think this is where we need to reclaim decisions that we are making for our own health and really start applying the knowledge that we have and trying to make better choices.
As always, Doc, we've probably gone a little bit over time, but, you know, we get into these conversations and we digress a little bit into information that is so relevant, potentially, and quite scary. So we'll leave it at that, but thank you, and we'll catch up with another topic next week.
Thanks, Gary. I'm looking forward to it.
That's Dr. Alex Bernhardi, our medicine lady.